Accession number 11063, Rule 4.
Mr. Byrne, Rule 4?
We saw more wreckage and more growlers, but whether the wreckage were just ordinary driftwood or from a previous wreck or whatever it were, I don't know. But anyway, we went on, and then darkness came, and the day after was lovely again, and all of a sudden somebody shouted aircraft. That were early at morning, and there were this great big fock wolf right long way off, just going round, and he stayed with us round and round and round. Well, it kept you on the gumpit, and this was the first time I'd been on the starboard gumpit. That's how I got to be at that side. Anyway, this guy went round and round, and then we heard some bombing or gunfire or something, and some said it were bombing, and the gun there said he thought it were gunfire. Anyway, later in the afternoon, then there were all of a sudden it was all hell let loose over on starboard quarter, and the chief engineer, he used to spend a lot of his time just looking out astern. He was an elderly man, a fella called Green. I think he were hoping wishing he were ashore to have his pension or something like that. He used to spend a lot of his time with his binoculars. He seemed to think that any attack had come from the stern. Anyway, all of a sudden we shouted flag, mast, and there was this little mast just showed over the skyline. Well, the skipper put his binoculars up, and they were coming quick. He said, man the after gun. So the gun lad said, it's frozen up, sir. He said, well, stand by to man the gun. Don't load until I tell you. He said, I'll swing the stern, maybe we can get one shot off at it. Well, by then it would come over the skyline, and you could see it were a cruiser with a destroyer with it, and we went down aft, and if you'd have fired the gun, it would have blown up, because it were, the recoil and everything were frozen. You couldn't even move the gun. We didn't load it, and we just nicely got down aft, and this cruiser were coming on going like mad. And I'll always remember it, because I didn't know the name of it then. It was a Trinidad. And the gun lad said, I told you it were in action. Well, it turned out it were fighting German destroyers, and it were, if it hadn't been for the Trinidad fighting the German destroyers, I reckon the German destroyers would have got to us. Well, this great big cruiser came dashing on and started signalling, and somebody said, look at that flag. Well, I'd read about it before. I said, oh, it's his battle ensign. Well, if you looked at the flag, it were like a ship under a flag. He'd a huge flag flying up his yard arm, and then he'd a small flag, and I think he'd another white ensign at stern. I think he'd three white ensigns. But the one, what is it, I also remember about him, was the speed he were going, the way waves were piling up at the bow, and the size of the ensign were fantastic. Anyway, he came right up a beam of us and signalled, and but what he said, we never got to know the skip, but that one time he, whatever they said, he just took it to himself, and then he turned and went away. And then the an 88 came flying round, and he were going round and round, and this fock wolf were going round. They were going at it ages, and then all of a sudden the fock wolf, we lost him completely, and the next thing we know were bombs. Now, Bill Short will tell you better, but I were at the starboard side, and there was some fell at the starboard side quite near. They weren't a long way off, but somebody said some fell at the port side. Well, if they fell at the starboard and the port, there's only one thing, it straddled us, but that I'm not going to argue with. And I remember saying to the gunner, good heavens, or I said bloody hell, whichever it were, I don't know. And he said, be thankful they're not Italians, Titch. He said, the Italians are really good at high level bombing. Well, with that, we'd looked up when the bombs came down, and good heavens, he were high up. Anyway, he came round and he had a few more goes at us, and in general, and you couldn't get a shot off it. Well, I couldn't have done but 303, and the Beaufort didn't, they were too far too high. But then he started going round again, round the outskirts, and he'd come a bit nearer, and the Beaufort had opened up a couple of shots at him and push him out. And then this 88 come. Well, he started going round, and he were nearer in but out of range, and every time he nibbled in, the Beaufort had a go at him. But we were the only ship in the convoy that had a Beaufort. There were some of the others, most of them had only small arms. I think we'd be about best armed ship at convoy, and the convoy was supposed to be 10 knots, and I don't think we ever got up to 10 knots, because whenever they got it up to so many revs, I think it was 60 odd revs or something, the others started falling back and it had dropped revs. And they were all old ships. There were a couple of standard boats, you know, the Empire boats. One were a man with poles, I think they call it the Tobruk. Anyway, this here 88 kept coming, and then we completely lost it. Nobody knew where it was, and the skipper was saying, "Keep your eyes peeled, don't look at the other side, keep your own side, watch for him, he's still here, he'd be about." And anyway, the gun layer said, came up to me in the gun pit with me, and he said, "He's a clever bugger, is this?" He said, "He'll come from your side. When he comes, he'll come fast, he'll come in from the stern, he'll throw himself on his back, and he'll come screaming down. Be ready for him. Have your gun cocked." I said, "My gun is cocked." Anyway, at this time then, after the Focke Wulf had bombed us, and before the 88 come in, when he came back round and they saw him again, a lot of the merchant seamen started clamouring round the lifeboat, and you know, nobody were down below. All the gunners were at action stations, and them that were on duty at engine room were on duty there. The helmsman and the lookout were on the bridge, and the rest of them were off watch, firemen and everything were clamoured round the lifeboats. Anyway, I said to the gun, "I hope them buggers don't leave us." So he said, "Cock your gun and wave it." So I said, "It is cocked." He said, "Well, cock it again." So I cocked it and waved it, and he shouted to him, and he said, "My name's Bernard Kelly, and I'm telling him, Austin Byrne, that if you leave us, if she gets hurt and you leave us, I'll fire at you. And if I don't fire at you, he will. So don't you think of leaving us." Well, with that, they fell back from lifeboats, they got away from boats. But we were still watching this 88, and we lost him. And then all of a sudden, he come racing up between ships at convoy. He'd be about 8 or 10 foot above water. And I'll also remember it, because I think they sit aside of one another in 88. I'm not 100% sure on that. But the guy that was sat, that I could see, he turned and looked at us. Not near enough that I could really see his face, but he had a brand new helmet on. And as Gunley said, he's a clever bugger. Anyway, he dashed right astern, and then he fooled around a bit, and he said, "He's working himself up to come in. He'll come from your side." Anyway, all of a sudden, he was right above the ships, over the ships on the far starboard side, and he started diving. Well, as he started diving, I bent my knees, lifted my gun up, and the gun had 303 bullets. I think it's 400 yards. 200 yards, you open up at 400, something like that. Anyway, as he come nearer, I hung on, and all of a sudden, it was squeeze the trigger. I was nicely balanced. I'd learnt that. And it was my sixth bullet. I also remember thinking, this is the sixth bullet I've fired, and I'm firing it at a bloody jury. That's why I never believe in disarmament, actually. Anyway, he come down, and my second tracer, I could see my second tracer already in him, so I just kept hitting him, moving my feet, and he kept screaming down. And they were coming down, they were coming at us, and then whether it were me that were hitting him, but I were hitting him, the both were all around him. And so he altered his pitcher dive, and he went for the ballot. It were on our port beam. And
for the what?
The ballot. A Panamanian ship called the Ballot. I think it's rather a well-known ship in America now. I'll tell you more about them if you want later on. And I did actually meet one of them in America 2 years after. 2 years after that. Anyway, he dived at that, and he let his bombs go. Well, I'd got I'd three bullets left in me. Hotchkiss clip. They don't hold so many, but they'd all gone into the cockpit. Well, the crew on the lifeboat were cheering. They could see him hitting. The skipper shouted, "Well done, gun! Well done, son!" And I got a right good applause for that. But in the meantime, as it dived across the top of the ship, you see, Bell he got to fire at him after I'd left him, because he couldn't really get at him, and I don't know whether he were hitting him, but I were hitting him. I'm not going to criticise Bell, whether he hit him I'm not going to say, but I did, and I could see my bullets going into the cockpit. And as I was firing, I remember Gunlay coming up the ladder and throwing himself over lip, and my bullets were going about 4 inches above Bernard Kelly's head, and he's saying, keep it going, Kitch, keep it going. Well, he pulled that clip out and jammed another clip in, and we got some more into him as he left the ballot and turned away. But anyway, in excitement, and then a minute or two after, there's all hell let loose. The radio operator came out and he said, you've caught the aerial. So then there were a big run round, because one of my bullets had cut the aerial. There were a big run round to hoist another aerial. Well, I expected somebody to go mad, and the skipper said, everybody be quiet. So I said, I'm ever so sorry, sir. He said, that's quite all right, boy. You got him. Well, by this time then, the junkers had gone round and done another couple of circuits, and he didn't fly as near ships then, and he came straight round, and everybody said, you've hit a man. Whatever you've done, you've hit one of them. They're not, it's wiggling and it's not flying well. Anyway, which of the pilots had it, I don't know. So it went straight round them, and it dropped about, I think it was 6 bombs in a cluster right round stern. I think it was the Tobruk, the Polish boat. It was a standard boat. It lifted the stern right out of the water, and then it settled down again, and then they signalled to the skipper that everything were all right. But in the meantime, the ballot had completely stopped. We saw the bombs come out of the plane, and in the sunlight they looked smashing, lovely and shiny, and they just seemed to hit the water. It seemed from where we were as if they'd hit the water and explode, and hit the side of the ship under the water. But in evident fact, I don't think they did, because the ship lost way, and then a lifeboat came off it, and they were running round on deck, and all this, that and other. And the skipper put his binoculars up, then he turned, he said, gentlemen, I hope if that happens to my ship, we behave better than they are. I thought, well, that is typical British, isn't it? You know, we do expect us to do a little better than these. Anyway, they abandoned ship. And in the meantime, I don't know where this other ship come from or where we first met it, but it was a small whaler. It didn't appear on my watch. When I went on deck, it was there one time. And evidently there were 3 ships set off, 3 whalers or something, set off to go to Russia to be handed over to the Russians. And this one, we came across it, and its music were blating out, and it were rolling in the heavy swell. When I first saw it, rolling in the heavy swell. And that dropped back. It were flying the white ensign, and that dropped back to pick the lifeboat up off the ballot. Anyway, it turned out afterwards that these 3 had set off independent to go to Russia, to be turned over to Russians, and 2 of them were never heard of again. It was thought that they'd iced up and turned over with weight of ice. The skipper of that one evidently told our skipper that the last time he saw them, they were terribly laden with ice, but they never turned up, evidently. Well, we went on, and then we went right up to went to the ice. He said, we're going north to the ice. We went north to the ice, wasn't this other ship, 6 ships, he signalled them and get north to the ice. And at that time, I think he got another wireless message from somebody, because he said something about another message, and we can't do anything. But by this time we'd been at sea 13 days, and we were, for want of a better word, way past a sell by date. We were very, very tired, and you were in your gumpets all the time, and it decided that we'd have to do 2-hour watches so that you could get a bit of rest. So you were doing 2 on and 2 off. Now we'd done this we went on this after the 10th day at sea. We'd done 4 hours on and 4 hours off, and odd nights you'd got 6 hours in bed instead of your 4. But when you got on a 2 and 2 off, all you did was go down and lay down, and you didn't even bother. I cleaned my teeth. I cleaned my teeth. The only Because I got a horrible taste in my mouth. And you cleaned your teeth, put your finger in some water and wipe your eyes, because your eyes were getting sore and you were really, you were shattered. Anyway, as I said, we'd done 13 days and we went north to the ice, and then I think there were six ships and this little ship, I think they called it the Silja or something like that afterwards. I found that afterwards. Anyway, as I said, they'd picked the people up who abandoned the ballot. But then when we got to the ice, we were trying to lead the way through the ice, and he wanted to get a bit into the ice, but I don't know how far he wanted to go. Anyway, he got stuck and we couldn't get out, and the others got out and left us and ran in. They had a bit of a talk, they out this lamp, and then they blew off, everybody blew off on their own, and we were left there. And then the mate, I don't think the mate and the skipper went down aft to talk to the guy on the small boat, and we put a ladder over the side. It was a proper ladder, not a rope ladder, I don't know where that came from. And they walked across the ice and came up, I don't know, I think there were about 16 of them, and they were the people who had abandoned ship off of the ballot. Now, ours was the third ship they'd been on. They started off on the ballot, they went on the soldier, and they came on ours. Well, they went down into our bunks, because the skipper said, you'll have to let them have your bunks, you'll have to stop midships. Now, the Cunlade had a cabin midships, and so when we went into the cabin, Jimmy Bell, he used to get in the top bunk, and I used to just take my duffel coat off and put it down so the sheepskin were facing up on the floor, on the deck. Oh, I'm getting old, I would never have thought of saying deck with floor when it was deck. Put it down on the deck, throw it over me, and it wasn't a matter of trying to get to sleep, you just bang, you were off. And next thing you know, somebody were calling you. And then it were a matter of what would you like for your tea? Evidently the steward had given the cook the keys to the store, and he'd cook what you wanted. One day we had jelly and damsons. Now he evidently did this jelly in a big enamel bucket and just stuck it outside galley door, and in no time it were frozen. When you were on watch, it were good hearted, they were thinking, the thought of you. The cook shouted, "Gunner, how long are you, when do you come off? I'll cook your eggs when you're coming off. I won't do your tea now." They looked after you. I mean, they know you were stuck up there. And every watch, he called you down and he gave you a tot. Sometimes you got two tots. It was very hygienic. You all drank out of the same glass. I don't know how much bloody rum he had, but he gave you a lot. Anyway, as we left the ice then, this here small ship had run out of fuel. So we started towing her, and as I said, the Americans were in our bunks, we were sleeping midships. And then I remember him saying to somebody, I don't know when, fetch the chief engineer. And the chief engineer and him had a couple of talks down on the flybridge below the bridge, but this time I think the chief engineer came onto the bridge this time. But anyway, whether he was on the flybridge or the bridge, I could hear the conversation, and the skipper said, "I want all she's got. Open her up, bust her as much as you can, and I forget his words. He might have said damage to engines accepted, and I might have read that. But anyway, what he said was, open her up. I didn't know then, but it was actually Bill Short, my friend, who broke the seals. But Bill will tell you more about that. I don't understand that. But at this time, the firemen were on watch and watch. Now, stoking with a coal burner, and firing for 4 hours and 4 hours off, we were shattered, but we'd done it for 13 days. They'd gone through all that bad weather firing, and they must have been shattered. But I also remember the skipper were leaning over the bridge, and the firemen were coming on deck to come down from the forecastle, and they had the life jackets with them and not many clothes on, and we were well lapped up. And I also remember him shouting down to the Chile, and he said, "Chile, get her up to 12 and you can have a very big tot. Get her up to 11 and you can have a big tot." And the Chilean shouted back, he said, "Make it whiskey and you can have 12 And the captain said, 12. He said, yes, but for a big whiskey, and I get it before I go down. So the skipper said, you're on, come up the bridge. And it was the only time in my life that, say, I ever saw a fireman come onto the bridge, and they didn't want to come up onto the bridge. We don't go up there. And he said, up here. Anyway, he poured the other fireman big tots of rum and then he set a chilli whiskey. And it were an ordinary tumbler, and it would be 2/3 full, or nearly 3/4. It was a huge tot. And he gave it to Tilly. He said, we're running for his life, Tilly. Chilli. He came from Chilli. And he said, Buster, as much as you can. He said, yes, sir. And he got through this big glass of whiskey in about three goes, and he said, you'll get all you want out of her now. And as far as I know, she got up to, I don't know, 13, Bill Short will tell you, 13 or 14 knots. But she was really flying through the water. Anyway,
was the purpose of this, going so fast?
The purpose of that was to get from the ice cap, because we were absolutely on our own, to get to Murmansk. We were running from the edge of the ice to get to Murmansk with the hours of darkness, and he wanted to get as near Murmansk as he could.
So you'd been separated because of the enemy action?
We'd been separated because of the bad weather and the enemy action and the getting stuck in the ice. Is that okay?
Yes.
Anyway, she was flying, and she was towing, as I said, she was towing this silge, or whatever they call it, this little thing. And I decided my feet were cold, and I wanted some fresh socks. At this time, I'll be quite honest, I'll tell you what I was wearing. I'd found out that the best way to keep my feet warm was to wear a pair of ordinary socks, and then my long tropical socks, and then my thick woolen underpants, and then two pair of seaboat socks. And by now I was wearing these here oiled wool socks that some lady in South Africa, didn't it, I think it was, but they kept your feet warm. And as I said, them sea boats were huge, and so I had a pair of ordinary socks, a pair of tropical socks, and two pair of sea boat socks on. Then I had my long johns on, then I had my pants on, then I had two jumpers and a scarf and my gloves, then I had my leather sheepskin jacket on, then my life jacket and a balaclava, and then I put my heavy duffel coat on. Now, the heavy duffel coat had elastic in the arms. A few years ago, they were selling them off at war surplus stores. I remember I'm getting one at work for Gateman, and he wouldn't believe I'd ever wore one. He thought nobody'd ever seen them, but his. And the hood was, what is it, you'd balaclava and a hat up top of your balaclava. You never got undressed, only a bit at a time. And when I changed my short socks, that's what I went down after. I did that in Kelly's cabin. I did 1 foot at a time. I did as I was told. I kept my socks on, kept my clothes on. Anyway, when I was down after and I came up, I noticed the tow were hanging slack. So I went on the bridge and I said, the tow's hanging slack, I think it's broke. Well, with that, the mate shouted, the skipper and the mate were on the bridge. I think the skipper lived on the bridge. The mate dashed down aft, came back, he said, the boy's right, the tow's broke. So the skipper said, good God. And he had over and he started circling and blowing the hooter. Well, he said, we don't know how long it's been broke. Well, I didn't, because I'd just gone down aft. And he said, well, it broke when you went down into the cabin. I said, I never looked, sir. But I noticed it when I was coming up. Thank you, he said. He always said thank you. Anyway, he circled for about 2 hours, 2 or 3 hours, for long enough. He was circling when we went off watch, and I think he was still circling when we came on watch. I forget how long he circled for. At one time I did know. Anyway, all of a sudden, when I were back on watch, and he said, I'm sorry, gentlemen, but we can't search for them anymore. I don't like to leave them to the fate in the Barents Sea. He said, but I'll have to run for Murmansk now. I hope God looks after them. And so with that, he gave instruction, the altered course, and we were on our way to Murmansk. Well, he'd been all that time flashing a right tiny little light, about as big as your fingernail what light, and blowing his hooter. And then it were run for Murmansk, and he said, let's hope we get there. It's run for it now. Because we were running, evidently the submarines were stationed round the inlet into Murmansk. Well, we ran I forget the times now, I forget which watch we're on, but as I said, two on and two off, you were up and you were down, and you were up and you were down. Well, I reported it broken, and then I went off watch and came back on, and they were still looking for her. And then I were off watch, and then I were on watch again. I'd come on at six, that was it. And about half past seven, I was feeling peckish, I was ready for my breakfast. And there's this great big bang and a flash and a shudder that nobody, you don't know what it was, but nobody has to tell you what it is. It's one of them things that you don't know what's happened. All of a sudden there's this big bang and this shudder, and mate were at chart room, and he come dashing out, and the skipper come dashing out, and the mate said, "I'll see," and he went down, dashed down aft, and he looked over the well deck, and he came back and he said to them, "I also remember it, because the only time I ever saw a merchant navy man salute." And he saluted the skipper, and he said, "She's torpedoing the starboard quarter, sir, torpedoing number 5 hold, big fire, and she's going down by the stern." The skipper said, "Very good, sound abandon ship, Mr. Mate." Well, they didn't have to sound it, because everybody were running. The sea were all on fire astern, the stern were all on fire, there were people screaming aft, and the explosion on the starboard side, it had thrown a lot of barbed wire out of the hold onto the petrol drums, which were exploding and igniting, and, you know, aviation spirit, actually, and that were up, the sea were on fire, and the skipper had put the confidential books on the port side of the bridge, and there were a sliding window that he opened, and he said to me, "Give a hand with these, boy," and I helped him to throw them through the window. They went through the window, they're in canvas bags with brass eye holes and some sort of a weight in the bottom. There were about 4 or 6 of them, and then went through, and he said, "Now to your lifeboat station, boy." And I also remember it because as I turned to go, I knocked a cup off. There were a cup and a plate there, and the plate went on the floor, on the deck. So it didn't break, and throw that bit, I bent down and picked it up and put it back. Anyway, I dashed to my lifeboat station, and I was the first there. I was in the port boat, and we'd had lifeboat drilling Lockyer away. It was, you know, just the usual thing, lower the boat and get in it and row around and that sort of stuff. And I got to my lifeboat station. They give us some exposure suits, so it were a kind of a bright yellow, and so I forgot my exposure suit, so I dashed back for that. Well, you couldn't have got them on over all your clothes, and there were no